Well, I've been spending much of the summer lost in the apple and apricot orchards of Wenatchee, Washington. Watched potted saplings be carefully pruned and then grafted to broken branches of mature trees, you know, using a wax cast. Worried about the two young and pregnant sisters who sit motionless at the edge of the field. Runaways, you know. Running away from what? Wait a minute. I, of course, never left my easy chair, but was transported by Amanda Copeland's compelling debut novel, The Orchardist, not just to Washington State and the foothills of the Cascades, but back in time, to the turn of the 20th century. Talmage is the one tending his orchards and also taking care of Della and Jane, the two runaways, while he's haunted by the loss of his own sister, who mysteriously disappeared years earlier.
He spent the morning cutting an entire half-tree into sections, and then stood sweating and looked over the broken length. Maybe she had left a note that had been upset by the wind and drifted and floated into some crack or crevice that he had yet to discover. He left his work and walked back across the field to the creek. But there was no note. She did not know how to read or write. As he knelt and splashed water in his face, an image of the deer that had recently gotten into the apricot orchard entered his mind. He drank from the creek and then stood, the blood pounding in his ears, and returned to the edge of the forest where the broken tree lay. He placed each round block upon a stump and proceeded to strike the block for kindling. Would he ever know what had happened to her?
Amanda Copeland reading from her new book, The Orchardist, and she joins us from Oregon Public Broadcasting. Amanda, welcome and congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much.
You know, just the scene we've set, this older man tending to this orchard. We understand your family attended orchards in Wenatchee, Washington. Your grandfather actually owned them?
Yes.
What part of what he did and those orchards did you want to get across in this book?
You know, he was a very quiet person, but he was also, I think, very passionate about his work and the trees, and that touched me deeply from a very early age. You know, there was this real integrity to his work that I admired and hoped, you know, to find someday in my own life.
Well, tell us more, because, you know, this idea of, you know, people think, well, they're trees, they grow. No, you know, you mentioned, you know, potted mm-hmm. saplings, and then you take the sapling and you graft a branch onto where a broken branch was, and, you know, there's the wax that you apply and the twine. Is this something you saw when you were growing up?
I did. I did research for the book to understand how one does things like that. But I remember as a child, my cousins and brother and I would sort of follow my grandfather around and pester him while he was trying to do his chores. And, you know, he was always keeping an eye on everything, you know, the trees that were doing well. He would take care of the trees that, you know, had something wrong with them because of, you know, gophers or some sort of disease. And he had a, you know, variety of ways of caring for the trees. It was really interesting to watch.
Well, it's interesting because his relationship with the runaway girl sort of mimics nature. You know, you can tend and tend and tend, but there's still going to be storms that knock over trees, you know. And
that's
the same,
yeah,
same with people. You know, we don't want to give anything away, but, you know, he tries so hard. It's not always successful with these young women. Talk for a second, though, about how the state itself and the land is a character here. Some of the physicality that you put in the book that you can think of now.
You know, it's just a majestic landscape. I was born there and I visit there and I live in Portland now. So I'm still in the Northwest, but I never get tired of how beautiful it is here. You know, I'm gushing now. It's just the mountains and the, you know, the water and, you know, being so near to the oceans, you know, everything is sort of within reach and you just have this feeling of history here and it's just haunting and it's, you know, at times it can be scary. You know, I mean, you get outside city limits, you go for a hike and there are those moments when you become disoriented and you think, you know, I am in a different world here, yeah. You know, this is something I'm not used to and I feel uncomfortable and that's important too, you know, to be uncomfortable, you know, in a landscape like that, to feel how powerful it is.
Well, we have all of those things through your characters. They feel the openness. The train comes to town, and they suddenly can leave this orchard and go to Seattle or go to the water, and so their horizons expand. But also, when they're in this beautiful orchard that it's an area you obviously love. There is danger there. There's haunting there. There's literally the loss of a sister haunting your main character. Mm-hmm. Then these two girls show up who are almost feral when they first show up. And this isn't giving away a lot. We learn early on that they had escaped what sounds like, you know, just a horror. They were, you know, penned up with other girls in a brothel. Where did that come from, that aspect?
Well, I was interested in the past of these two girls, and I knew that I wanted to have them have experienced something that was basically the worst thing that I could imagine, which would be, you know, to be sexually abused in a place where you couldn't escape. And how does one's sort of psychology form in an environment like that? And I wanted to sort of follow these poor, you know, creatures after they actually escaped and see, you know, how those experiences would influence, you know, the choices that they would make afterwards.
Yeah. You had to have been. It is not a thin book. You had to really be immersed in this time, in this past. Has it changed you somehow? Have you been able to sort of extricate yourself from that time? You know, I can't imagine. I mean, I know what it was like to read the book. You know, I'm still feeling, you know, I'm in some orchard in Washington State. How about you, to immersed yourself in writing it for so long?
You know, it's so funny because, you know, this book, I sort of recognize now that I was using it in a way. You know, it's a novel, it's an art form, it's an expression, but also sort of personally and selfishly, I feel like it's sort of a capsule to contain a lot of things that I've been thinking about. A lot of the emotions, a lot of the things I felt about my grandfather and about other family members, you know, my love of the orchard and that place, you know, I've sort of been able to contain them in this book. And I kind of feel like, yeah, you know, I can move forward and I don't have to obsess about getting it down anymore.
Yeah. Just one question about the method of writing. No quotation marks. Everything, you know, description flows into quotes without marks. Booklist says the quotation mark-free dialogue, which could seem like an affectation in a different type of story, emphasizes the melding of these solitary characters with their environment. Was that your plan?
Yes. And I can say that now that people think it has succeeded. But that came from, honestly, just reading a lot of Cormac McCarthy in the beginning of writing this book. And at a certain point, you know, someone who had read a draft of The Orchardist said, you know, why don't you just put in quotation marks and see what happens and see, you know, how that changes the text. And I did, and I didn't like it. I felt that it distracted somehow from the reading experience. And also, these are very quiet people we're dealing with. And I liked the feeling when you're reading of whenever someone is speaking, it's like they don't want to call too much attention to the fact. So it's sort of self-conscious to not having quotation marks.
Amanda Copeland, the book is The Orchardist. If you're going to pick it up, be prepared not to be able to put it down. Amanda, thanks so much for speaking to us about it.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Like summer, you know, you hate to come to the end of a book like that. Here Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI. I'm Robin Young. Please join us to see what this week brings here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software. Find over 200 job openings at mathworks.com.
PRI, Public Radio International.